What's up, bitches? It's Chris. This is another ABS podcast, another Bright Side podcast for you guys. This episode is brought to you by the Coco Jack. And that's right, bitches. The Coco Jack. It's the summer. Let's just fucking bust open some nuts and have a fucking awesome time. Just add some fucking, like, any kind of rum coconut. For those who don't know what the Coco Jack is, the Coco Jack pretty much is a contraption that's so fucking simple to use. You just fucking put on a Thai coconut, smash it like you're fucking thirsty, all right? Because you are. You should be thirsty. And you open it up, circular motion, just add a fucking straw and drink the coconut water right from the coconut. And of course, if you're going to be like me, you're going to Irish that bitch up and, you know, get drunk pretty much. Yeah, that's basically how I do it. If you don't know, coconuts have more electrolytes than Gatorade, much more healthier for you than soda, and definitely more rehydrating than water. And if you want to, it's definitely a good idea to add it to your diet or supplements or just, you know, drink it on a nice hot summer day. Just drink that bitch. The Coco Jack. You can also check out the Coco Jack at the, I think it's /CocoJack.com. And make sure to use our special 10% off code ABS podcast. That's it. Oh, and this episode is also brought to you by Onnit. Onnit. Onnit is a human optimization website where you can go check out some awesome supplements like Hemp Force Protein. Awesome protein for you to just add on a regular basis. Obviously, we had to ship the hemp from Canada since it's illegal to grow hemp here in the United States. But that's why it's a little bit pricey, but it's pretty good. All delicious, amino acids, healthy protein. And Onnit actually has this new shit called... I don't have it, but it's a whey protein bar that is so fucking delicious. Like, it's one of the best protein bars out there. It's gluten-free, and it's made out of grass-fed cows, like, using their milk. So, you know, it's the most organic bullshit out there. And, of course, you can't forget Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is one of my favorite supplements that they offer. You just pop three of those bitches before a workout and you can fucking climb mountains, just beat the shit out of anybody. And next thing you know, you're a bad motherfucker out there. And that's Onnit, guys. Make sure to go to abspodcast.com/support to check out these and more offers by this podcast. All right, guys. All right, we're about to start. I've got William Calloway, an old friend of mine from years, years ago. And I'm Chris, and this is another Bright Side podcast. Alright, so here's William Calloway, author of the Zenton Chronicles. Hi, William.
What up, what up? Long time no see, man. How you been?
I've been pretty good, you know, just traveling the world, you know, doing my shits, and trying to eat healthy, look at you, man. You're out there in Vegas right now.
Yeah, man, Vegas is hot as shit. I don't know why I decided to move here. I don't know why I'm still here, but I'm still here. So there's nothing I can really do about that. But, Vegas has its beauty, don't get me wrong. I like the summer a little bit more because we have a lot of rain that comes. So it's not really as hot as what people say it is. Because, like, when it rains here, even though it's for a short time, you get a lot of action, thunder, lightning, and stuff like that. I remember when I was in school, I went to school for engineering. We had this really just massive storm during the summertime. And all the buildings on campus were fine, except for the engineering building that flooded. I mean, if you're an engineer, I mean, come on, wouldn't you think that that would be the last building that would flood?
So I mean, I guess they didn't, you know, make good engineers. Is that what you're saying?
I guess not.
Dude, how the fuck did the engineers build a building? That,
it dude, flooded. That, it was like maybe two, maybe 3 feet of water in our building. And we were like, this building is so much crap. Like, the last building on campus should not have flooded. It should have been. We should have been okay. But I guess not. So. Yeah, go Rebels, UNLV.
Well, I'm pretty sure they put that shit on the recruitment brochure, right?
Yeah, right? Don't be an engineer in UNLV. You build buildings that flood. So that's what happened. But it was fun. It was cool. I had a lot of fun my school year. It took me a while to get my degree, but I decided to stay here and just doing what I can. So, yeah.
Well, that's awesome, man. You moved out there, what, 07? No, 06, right?
Yeah, I moved out here the summer after I graduated from Sarah. Moved out here, went to school, and out-of-state fees out here are a bitch. So what ended up happening was that I would go to school for like a couple years, take a little summer school, and then a couple years later, I had to take like half-time classes. So instead of taking 12 credits, I ended up taking 6 credits. Mm-hmm. And doing it that way, which was cheaper, it kept my out-of-state fees from being like, my tuition was like maybe almost $10,000 a semester because of my out-of-state fees, so
yeah,
it was a pain in the ass. And student loans kind of suck, but I mean, I guess it's the norm. Everyone has student loans, so why not have student loans?
Yeah, I know I didn't really think it out through when I first moved to Ohio. Mm-hmm. I went to Ohio, and I realized, oh, wait, no Cal grants, no, you know. None of that shit. Mm-hmm. And it really fucked me over. But I came back to Cali and I finished it up. I actually graduated this.
Yeah, I saw that on your Facebook. You graduated from what, UC?
Cal State LA.
Yeah, Cal State LA.
Yeah, finally. Fuck, man.
Yeah. College. Once you're done, you're like, you don't have to wake up for school anymore. No more testing. Like, what the fuck do I do now?
Well, I still wake up at 4:30 in the morning, man. It's not easy.
What do you do? Like, you work out?
Well, yeah, I go to the gym in the morning, and then my job's right next to the gym, so I just walk over there. Mm-hmm. And then I do jiu-jitsu after work.
Okay.
For for some part of it. Not all the time, but we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I wake up early, or at least I try to, whenever I have a deadline for, like, a new comic series or anything like that I'm working on, I would usually get up around 5:30, 6 o'clock because it'll give me like the entire morning. And I usually work from about 6 to about 10, 11 o'clock, just working in the office. Just put the tea kettle on, and I'm usually doing that. But I have anything that's not due for a while, then I won't wake up. I usually sleep in until about 8 o'clock, which is still pretty early for me. But I'm trying to get back down to waking up at 5 o'clock because mm-hmm. I do have a deadline for a new comic series that I'm drawing up right now. So it's been a lot of pretty much just me. My team consists of myself, my buddy Lance, and my friend Janae. I do the pencils. If necessary, I do the inking too, but I usually just do the pencils and pass it off to my buddy. He does the inking, and then I pass it off to Janae, who does the coloring on Photoshop. So we just have a little cycle going, so that's what we've been mainly promoting. I've been doing character design and stuff like that for the past, like, maybe 2 months.
Well, I mean, you mentioned it, but so you're a comic book artist pretty much, right?
Yeah, that's what I decided to be. I actually started my own comic book studio called Hero Studios here in Vegas.
Really? So yeah. is it not just the Zenton Chronicles?
Well, the thing with the Zenton is that the whole thing that began with... When I was in college student in 2007, this is when I started getting into actually reading books. Like, everybody was talking Harry Potter and stuff like that. When we were in high school, I didn't give a fuck about Harry Potter. Everybody was talking about, oh, Harry Potter's a good book, stuff like that. I honestly didn't start reading Harry Potter until, like, my senior year of college. I actually picked up The Goblet of Fire, and I started reading it, and I read it in, like, maybe 2 weeks, maybe three. I don't know. I think it took a whole summer. I might be exaggerating. I don't know. Anyways.
It's a kid's book. Realize that. Yeah, it's a kid's book, so, right?
But when I saw the book and it was like over 700 pages, I'm like, fuck, who has the time to read this book? Like, this J.K. Rowling has been doing something very like elaborate to get people to read her 700-page book. Because if I see a 700-page book, I'm going to look at it and probably go, like, I'm not reading that. That's fucking stupid.
It's black magic, man. She got him by black magic. That's how they
did it. That's what she did. But anyway, I read The Goblet of Fire and like fell in love with the story. The story was in the book itself. So I'm reading the story and my head just completely exploded because it was actually a good book. Ever since then, I read all the Harry Potter books, and I started getting into other books like, you know, Hunger Games, Percy Jackson and the Olympians. My favorite book series right now is I Am Number 4. That is a really good book series. I recommend anybody go do that. So what I Am Number 4? Like, I Am Number 4.
Oh, wait. That is a book series, right?
Yeah, and it's very, like, book thick right now. It comes out in September. And one of the best books I like because there's a lot of intertwining stories. They do a lot of novellas that they do when in between books and stuff like that. So They write a lot of like mini books that kind of coincide with the main series. So it kind of keeps the audience engaged while the next book is coming out. That's why I like it so much. So you don't get lost. You don't get, okay, what happened in book 4 to book 5 and stuff like that. But in my head, I thought about if these guys can do, you know, write these books and do all the stuff, then why can't I? You know? That's where a lot of people kind of get, you know, get stopped when they're trying to do something as far as reading a book. I mean, when I wrote J.K. Rowling's book, no one really knows it, but the Harry Potter books, they actually take place in, like, the 90s, the early 90s, because she wrote the first book in 1989. But The Sorcerer's Stone didn't get published till 1999. So,
really? So it took them, like, a decade?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it took her a decade. She wrote books 1 through 4 back in the, like, 1989 to, like, 1993, stuff like that. But she did not get discovered, and those books began published until 10 years after that. Once she got published, that's when she started writing the rest of them, Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince, and The Deathly Hallows. So she waited literally 10 years to find an agent and get published. And coming from an author's standpoint, when you're looking for an agent and you're trying to get published, it's not the easiest path because you usually run into obstacles like agents don't want to represent you, your work is not good, so on and so forth. So she kept on going for 10 whole years, living from, like, she was poor. I know everybody knows that story. Like, she was poor.
Yeah, she was broke, right? She was living on the streets.
She was living on the streets. She was broke. I think she had a couple jobs here and there. But what she kept on doing was kept on putting out those query letters and trying to get an agent. And then finally, 10 years later, after the fact, she finally got discovered. And now she, like, almost richer than the Queen of England or something like that. So,
really? Like, no.
She has her books. She has her movies. She has her theme park. She has merchandise. She has all sorts of stuff. She kind of has residuals for the next 3, 4, maybe even 5 generations. Like, whoever she has her kids get together with, they are loaded for life.
Well, realize that the Queen, you know, gets residuals from every generation ever.
True.
In England, like, and other countries.
That's like thinking about, like, Harry Potter is a huge pop sensation right now. Pop culture is in that area to where you say Harry Potter, immediately people know what you're talking about.
Well, so, you know what's weird is that I do recall there was, like, a spike of interest when I was in high school into Harry Potter. It kind of died down, and just recently I feel like there's an uptake again.
Yeah, that's because, like, I was watching a video today on YouTube. It was these guys, they did a parody with Harry Potter. Like, it was like a music video to Bruno Mars' Uptown Funk, but they did it.
Yeah, I did see that. I actually saw that this morning. I was like, what
funny.
The?
Like,
it's pretty funny. Well done, too. It wasn't hacky at all.
No, it was actually really good, and that's what, you know, a lot of people have been doing. Like, I've been following the Harry Potter line for, like, the longest time, and everyone is spreading rumors that she's going to continue it on. Some people are saying that she's finished. What I would like to see, no lie, is a story behind, like, Lord Voldemort's time, like, before he came back. Like, my main question is, like, how did you end up in the back of that dude's head in the first book? Like, what the hell was you thinking?
Right?
So, I don't know. You could have done something a little bit better, not just pop out and someone's dude. I don't know. It was weird. But my point is that, like I said, she was broke. She had nothing. She had nothing but this idea of a plot that she wrote down on a napkin. And then from there, that woman followed her dreams and eventually became published. So, like, I'm reading this Harry Potter book, and I'm learning about, like, all the stuff that she's been through. And I'm like, okay, if she can do it, then I can do it. And so the idea behind the Zentown Chronicles literally came from about maybe a few months of like deciding, trying to convey the idea of what people are going to like. Like, I'm a huge Power Rangers fan. I love Power Rangers. I mean, who doesn't like Power Rangers, right? Well,
yeah, I was going to say that. It looks like your Zentown Chronicles are very inspired by Power Rangers, right?
Yeah. It kind of is, mainly because, I mean, well, every superhero have that alter ego state where, you know, they're probably going to high school, stuff like that, but on the side, they're like some kind of superhero, like Spider-Man, Superman, stuff like that. Like, the thing that kind of inspired me with the Zentown is I didn't want them to look like they were going to be Power Rangers, you know what I mean? I wanted them to have that kind of thing to where when people read the books or read the comics or whatever, they'll know that, oh, this is the Zentown, it's not Power Rangers. That's why, instead of giving them, like, the whole spandex feel and stuff like that, I gave them basically a whole armor idea. Like, that's why when they change or when they transform, they grow armor. They have the armor ability, it's metal, it's really hard armor. So taking that into consideration, that's what the Zentown, that's how that name became what it is now. Because I can't think of the original names that I had. I'm pretty sure they were really stupid. And I don't want to say it, but I do remember.
Well, usually the first rough draft is not the best. So yeah, no. Is that the rough draft? So no. I was going to ask you, Zentown, where exactly did that come from then? Is that because of their armor, or what does it mean?
Actually, when I first conveyed the name, and I know a lot of creative people that do this, they get most of their ideas while they're taking a shower. I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah. I was taking a shower, and I'm just like, I wrote down a plot. I just need a name. And I'm sitting there thinking about a name, and then I started just taking things from other words and putting them together, and then that's where I came up with the name Zentown. I was like, that sounds pretty cool. I mean, people can probably get with that, and, you know, just after they get over the hurdle of trying to pronounce it, then it would become like one of those things. Because I have people pronouncing it Exton or Zentonio, and there's not even an O behind that word. You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know where you get that from, but I got people who, like, can't pronounce the letter X very well. So I usually have to break down the word Zentown. If spelled with a Z, that's how you pronounce it. Okay? Even though it's spelled with an X. So that's where that idea came from. And then, I mean, ever since I started writing the book, the whole concept, the whole plot between all four books and stuff like that, it just started kind of stick together and stuff like that. So once I got that name, that's what I went with and started going from there and building this whole some people think that it's just the Zentown, okay? So we have the superheroes in that book, but it's actually turned into a lot more. The reason why I haven't unveiled other heroes yet is because I'm not starting my second season until fall 2015, but I have plots written, I have other stories written with other heroes that are going to be built in like this whole universe, so to speak.
So it seemed like as an author, you're kind of doing it directly coming from you, right? It doesn't seem like it's coming from anywhere else. Like, it's right. So yeah. It's not like a publisher is distributing it, right?
No. What it is what I discovered, and I'm still currently looking for an agent. So while I'm doing that, what I'm doing is I'm building what's called an audience. So hang on real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I do a lot of marketing. I sell a lot of stuff. And what I figured out is that this, have you heard of this book, Jab, 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 Right Hook?
What the fuck? Okay.
Yeah, it's by Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a really big entrepreneur who actually made it big, and he sells wine via social media. So everything about social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, all that stuff is in this book. So what he talks about is basically, why would you get anyone to help sell your product when you can just market it online? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Why pay an agent commission of about 20% of your check? Why give the publisher your right to your work when you can do that yourself? You know what I mean?
Well, I think for some people, I think most people can, but mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people that can't. Yeah. Like, I can't see Stephen King the way he started out doing it himself.
Yeah. Well,
You know, especially when he was a drunk and, like, doing a lot of coke and, you know, whatnot. Mm-hmm. Thank God he didn't stop, you know.
Well, that's coke. What I'm doing. That's where this whole, what we call, you know, people who self-publish a book, we call them indie authors. So what that is before the whole wave of Facebook and MySpace, before all that stuff happened, yeah, people were publishing books the traditional way because the internet hadn't existed yet. There was a lot of people that were like, oh, that's the internet thing. I don't really know how to work it. So that's where, you know, Stephen King, he's been writing books for, like, ever. So before the whole social media wave hit, he was doing it the traditional way. Like, some person found, he wrote some weird shit, and they liked it, and they published his book. And ever since then, he's been doing it over and over and over again. But for a lot of people who are aspiring authors or trying to write books, you can find them all over the internet. They're self-publishing books because it's a lot easier for people. Now, granted, self-publish and versus traditional publishing, they both have their adversities. And I did my Periscope show on this about 2 days ago on the benefits of each. Now, do you have, feel like you wrote a book, you want to self-publish it. It's easy to do, but a lot of people don't really understand how to do it. Like, the adversity with self-publishing is all the marketing, all the strategies, everything, that's with you. You're going to have to figure out how to get your book exposed and get it out there for people to see, for people to read, and you're going to be managing your own book, though. The thing with that is that it's easy and it's cheap to publish your book because most people just download it on Kindle or Nook or anything like that on their iPad and they're able to carry it with you. There's no more people actually buying books anymore. That's what I figured out because the only book that I actually buy is the I Am Number 4 book. Everything else is on my Kindle and I read it that way. So what I thought is my book becomes an ebook, then it'll be easier for me to do it that way because there's no printing cost, there's no shipping cost, there's nothing like that when you're dealing with Kindle. You just upload it to the Kindle, you do your book art, and you sell it. But the thing that...
Well, I mean, I'm one of those old school people that actually still buys books.
But
as the problem with me is that I'm one of those, I don't really read fiction and rarely read nonfiction. What I do read are like all factual and educational stuff like, see, and which makes sense why you would want to buy the hard copy because you would constantly be referring to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can totally see like fiction, which is why I think fiction was the first category to really not know what to do once the digital age started coming in, you know, because people wouldn't refer, they would read it once and then be like, well, remember that story and blah, blah, and this and that. Yeah. And they would need it for one, mass production, which is costly, and two, very little references, because not too many people will reference fiction. So once the digital age started coming in, all the fiction writers started fucking falling apart, didn't know what to do. Digital books, I don't know, man. Like, I just can't get the handle of it, but that is the wave of the future. I mean, how do you handle with your fucking books? Like, well, how do you read, first of all, Kindle?
I read two different ways. Like you, I still buy books, but... The book that I still buy, like I said, is the I Am Number 4 books because I'm OCD. If I started collecting them hardcover, I'm going to collect the entire series hardcover. If I started collecting them on Kindle, then I'm going to collect the entire series on Kindle. So I'm going to be half hard, half on Kindle. Another thing of books that I collect is like entrepreneurship books, self-personal development books. I get those actual books because, I don't know, I go to a lot of seminars where those authors are there and I'm able to get those books signed and have them in my collection. But as for my books personally, like I said, I uploaded to Kindle. They're online. They're digital copies. But also afterwards, I've also gotten a lot of people asking, are the books going to be in paperback anytime soon? And I kind of left it up to the audience to decide whether or not those books are going to be paperback. So once I started getting people sending me emails, stuff like that, when it's going to be available in paperback, that's when I decided to manufacture it and actually get it print on demand service to where people can go online and order it, they print the book and they ship it out to whoever ordered it.
Where can they go and download this book and buy it?
It's on Amazon.com. If you have a Kindle, which everyone has a Kindle nowadays, or if you don't, you have a Kindle app. You can download from either the iTunes or the Android market. You can go online, search the Zentile Chronicles, and all five of my books will pop up. There's four books in the main series, and then there's also one interlude story that I wrote for Halloween last year. So all those books, they became bestsellers because I figured out how to market them online. And once you figure that out, you create what's called a following of people who are always going to be interested in what you want to, what they want to read.
That's so awesome, man. Congrats.
Yeah, it took a lot of work, and I'm still building it because I'm sorting out to all the people and stuff like that. I'm giving them content that they want to hear, that they want to see. Whenever I draw a new panel of comic books, I post it up online and give people an idea. I attach my website to it, and they go down there and they check it out. That's where most of that stuff comes from. But like I said, I am self-published. I'm self-published because I know how to work that system. I know how to market, and I know how to get great content and feedback out there. Of course, I'm still looking to be traditionally represented by a publisher. I send out letters to agencies and stuff like that and the publishers, but like I said, it's a process. That's the adversity with going the traditional way is trying to sort through all that stuff because you're going to get an agent that completely hates your work. It's stupid. They're not going to represent you, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, well, fuck those agents.
Yeah, I mean, you're fuck those that... agents. Because, well, a lot of people don't understand is that afterwards, you know, you might meet that another agent literally the day after who's going to completely love your work and want to sign with you and help you get published. So, okay. Like I said, both self-publishing and both traditional publishing, they have their adversities. It's just trying to figure out which way you guys want to go and do it.
Well, I think self-publishing is probably the way to go, man. I mean, yeah. Once you have the following, once you already have everything set up, I mean, it gets a lot easier. Not that I would know, but I mean, based on everything common sense, you know? I mean, you get the massive following, you need to do less marketing, but obviously, you know, you can focus more on the work that you want to do, which is writing, you know?
Yeah, and it takes a lot of time to build that audience, but the author of Jab, 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 Right Hook, Gary Vaynerchuk, I actually talked to him for advice. And he said the best way to build a following is to literally engage with people every single day. Post content of things that are relative to what you're trying to do every single day. So, like, on my Twitter, I write about superheroes. I do comics. So, naturally, I'm going to post things about Comic-Con, about, you know, The Flash, Superman, stuff like that, things that they're coming out with later on to build that following. Because people are going to look at that, and they're going to be like, wow, this guy, he's awesome. He posts up a lot of comic book stuff, let's see what he is. Click on the profile, you see my website, go to the website, you find out that I'm an author of a superhero series. What they're going to do, they're going to download the book and they're going to read it. I thought they're going to like it. Like,
do you have like a sample or anything, or is it all just you got to buy them all? Or just one or whatever?
What Kindle does is that you can actually sample any book online. So if you are looking for a sample to read, you can go to Amazon.com, find my book, The Zentile Chronicles, and what's going to happen is that you'll be able to download a sample to your phone and read. I think my sample, because my books are around 300, 400 pages, I think the sample is like the first three chapters or something like that.
Well, that's dope.
Yeah, so you can check it out. If you like it, you can download the rest of them. If you don't, no worries. But the way I do it is that my books are relatively cheap. They're like $1. It's 99 cents. Reason why I did that is because if you're a new author and you're just emerging and no one knows who you are, nobody's going to buy your book for $10. That's me.
Well, look, on top of that, $1 isn't that much to spend. If they don't like the book,
we spent $1.
That's just only $1. But, man, that's really well done, well marketed, well thought out about how to enter the market, man.
And it took me a while to figure that out because, like, my books, when I first started writing them, my books were, like, $2, $3 and stuff like that. And it got a little bit of sales, but I told myself it's not about the money. It's about getting exposure. The money will come later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, mark it down to 99 cents and stuff like that, and people are going to buy your book. They're going to see the reviews. They're going to see what your ranking is and stuff like that. None of that matters. You can have, like, 400 reviews. You can have, like, number one Amazon best-selling book, but if your book is, like, $10 and I don't know who you are, I'm not going to buy your book, okay? That's just me. Some people are different, but if you're, like, selling the book for, like, $10 and I don't know who you are, then I'm not going to buy it. But if it's someone like Gary Vaynerchuk, Cliff Braun, J.K. Rowling, those people, and they're selling the book for $20, I'll buy the book because I know who they are. Yeah. I know what I'm getting my money for once I download their book. And that's how that's how you get started, stuff like that. So once I decided that I'm not going to sell my books for $3-4 anymore, I'm just going to put it up for 99 cents, dude, that's when the sales started happening. Because not only does that, you know, entice people to go buy your book, I mean, my covers, I've gotten some pretty good feedback from my book covers, and that's usually what happens. Like, you have a split second for people to look at your book and be like, is this what I want to read or not? Is the synopsis what I want to read or not? You literally have a split second for those people to make a decision to actually go out and read your book. And my first book, the book cover for my first book, when I originally published it, was not that great. Okay.
So, really?
Yeah. I don't have it. I think I have it somewhere on my flash drive. Somewhere. I don't have it on me right now, but it wasn't that great. Like, it wasn't. It was mostly penciled. It was black. The only thing that was colored were the eyes. Okay. When I decided, when I got some feedback from that cover from another fellow author, I forgot what his name is, he told me that you need to just take your first cover and just scrap it and do it again. So that's exactly what I did. I got my buddy Daryl to help me do that book cover, and it came out a lot better. And once I did that, and once I, you know, swapped out the covers, that's when the sales for the book started coming through. And if you write a series of books and people like the first book, obviously they're going to go back to the second, they're going to go back to the third, they're going to go back to the fourth, and they're going to keep on going back for however long you're going to be writing books. And that's how that following goes. So that's why I decided to write a series and not just one book. Granted, it's a lot more marketing, but I usually just market my first book, because if people go online and find Vince R. Chronicles book one, they're going to, obviously they're going to find book two, book three, book four, and whatever else I do after that. And that's what those sales are going to generate.
So is, I mean, obviously this is, the Zenton is pretty much the pioneering character and story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you plan on doing like multiple characters or with their own storylines, or do you plan on adding characters to this storyline?
Well, as for the Zenton Chronicles, that particular book series is already over. It's finished. I've already closed the closet on that. But what I am starting to do, because I have been getting a lot of emails about people wanting to, they want more. They want to see, you know, where the character's going to end up after the final battle. So I've already decided like years ago that I was going to keep on going and going with this. And I've actually already started the next series called The Zenton Crusade, which is not coming out for like another year or so. I'm still actually writing the first book, and it's taken me it's gone through drafts and drafts and drafts and drafts and drafts to make sure that it's great to go, and you know, it intertwines the story. The thing about writing sequels is that you're always going to have to write the sequel better than the other book, so the other series. So what I've discovered so far is that this series, the sequel series, it's not like the original. It's not like those books before. It takes on a more of a mature kind of turn on everything. Everything's a little bit darker. So when you first meet the main characters, they're teenagers, they're kids, okay? So naturally, you can't really get into anything too hectic, especially because the Zenton Chronicles is like your kind of preteen to like up kind of genre book. So I didn't want it to get into any type of like, you know, dark, anything like that. People do die, I'm not gonna say that, but people do die, but along with the sequel series, I wanted it to be a little bit more adult-like, because our characters, they're grown up now. They're adults. Some of them have kids. Some of them...
Wow, there was some fucking, huh?
Yeah. That's, I mean,
some boning.
Yeah, keep the torch going. But as for other characters and other heroes that I'm planning on doing, it's kind of like I'm building this whole universe where they all exist. They all know of each other, or some of them do, some of them don't. But the next series is a mini series that's coming out. I want to say it's already written. I'm getting the covers done. That series should be out in next year, next spring, so about March. Yeah, about March. And that's going to tie this series with the sequel series coming together. And in this mini series, you're introducing new heroes, new Zenton, basically. Who kind of take up the mantle of the old Zenton, who obviously has grown up and gotten kids. So there needed to be kind of like new heroes to kind of fill the void, because some things are going to happen. But with those heroes, I also introduce other heroes who kind of just like randomly pop in and kind of help those Zenton become what they need to be. But those heroes are going to have their own story later on as we write and come up with new storylines, stuff like that. So whenever I come up with a new idea for a new hero or a new story, I usually just write it down and come back to it later. So that way it's out of my head, I don't forget it. I can come back to it and, oh, yeah, I remember writing that. Okay, so now let's come up with some character designs, some plot, and see what we can do. Okay, so there's a lot more happening than just the four books. The four books are out there. You can read them, get caught up, check them out. But our next season, season two, starts in September, and it's going to start with the graphic novel, Wrath of Steel, is that's what I'm calling it.
Is it going to be a graphic novel?
Yeah, it's going to be like an interlude story that's going to be happening in between books one and two, books three and four, stuff like that. But right now I'm dealing with the interlude between books one and two. It's going to kind of link what kind of happened in the summertime between books one and two. Kind of like an interlude story. Like, it's not nothing major. Like, you're not going to lose time over not reading this, okay? It's just something that's going to get people kind of familiar with what the characters look like, get their, you know, what their armor looks like, so on and so forth, and kind of get it going to where, oh, that's what Jason looks like. Oh, that's what Sam looks like, stuff like that. So when they decide to read the rest of the book, they have a mental picture of what they look like. So,
yeah.
I actually got invited to do some comic book work. Here's one of the panels right here.
Oh, that's so sick.
Yeah. The inking takes fucking forever. So that's why I decided not to take the inking anymore because, I mean...
Were you in my art class? No, right?
I don't think so. With Boyer?
Yeah, with Boyer?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I was. I don't know.
Oh, shit. That guy was a fucking pothead, man.
He was good. Here's another panel that I did.
Oh, that looks cool, man. You know, yeah. That top one actually reminds me of Tron.
Does it really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's so pretty sick.
You can kind of see, like, what the armor looks like and stuff like that. Like, that's actually one of my characters' names, Jason. His armor is primarily blue and gold. So you scan him in and get him colored, he'll be all just kind of blue, shiny blue with the little quills on his stomach right there, going to be gold. You know, got a kind of cool color scheme. And again, with the armor and all the other stuff, like, they went through some pretty heavy trials. Like, the armor designs that I'm using right now are the armor designs I'm going to have, like, finalized. That's what they're going to look like. So it went through a lot of trials. Let me say, I think last summer, that's when I just scrapped all the original designs and started redesigning everything else. So all the armors have been redesigned. Everything looks good. I think there might be one set of armor I might redesign because it doesn't look great. It's just something that I just swapped together, so I'm going to have to scrap that and put it back in. But other than that, to my liking and to the liking of my audience, the armor design, I like it. So that's what I'm usually going off of. And a lot of people ask me, like, how do you remember, like, drawing, you know, the same thing over again? And it's exactly what it is. You draw it over again.
Yeah.
You develop that muscle memory to where, you know, okay, this goes there. He has a spin on his head. Okay, he has quills on his chest, so on and so forth. And you just kind of work your way to where when you draw that scene, you start to be able to draw it from different perspectives because you know exactly where those parts of his body need to be or parts of his arm need to be. So,
well, just like the first name of the first title that you were going to give it, I mean, it needs to be reworked, redone over and over and over and over until it's exactly what you want.
Yeah, it was actually, I can't think of the name to save my life, but I know when I was going to literally use that name for my title, and I was going to be like, no, this is going to get so much shit, I probably shouldn't do it. So that's when I had the story written, the manuscript was already done, the book cover was ready to go. I was just missing the name, and I was just like, there has to be a name, so... The only thing that sucked about it is that when I did finally come up with the concept of the senton, I had to go through the entire manuscript and change out that word with senton. And it took that. Write your book first before you come out with the title. Come out with the title first before you write your book. That's all I got to say. Because you're going to fuck. You're going to have to go through 400 pages and just make sure you get every single word. Make sure you get every single word because you're going to have people that's going to be confused and you're like, what the fuck, you know? So I made sure that I got every single part word that wasn't senton and replaced it with senton. So come up with the title first, worry about the manuscript later. That's all I can tell you.
That's like the opposite of what everybody has ever said.
Yeah. Make sure you got a solid title. As long as your title is solid and you like it, then you're good. But if you write 400 pages of fake content like I did and then decide, oh, I'm not going to call it this anymore, I'm going to call it this, then you have to make sure that not only does your story make sense and go with the title, but you also have to make sure that everything is relative to whatever it is your title is. So that was a lesson learned in itself. So.
Well, I read a little bit of I forgot which one you sent me, but I'm part of your like newsletter.
Oh, okay, cool.
There was like some kind of sample or a little, like a page or two that I was able to read. And just reading it, I was noticing, and now that you just showed me the like some of the graphic novel stuff that you're trying to do, obviously this isn't geared specifically to kids. This is more adult themed and much bigger audience than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and the reason why I did that is, let's face it, man. Like, when we were going to school, like, no one under the age of, let's say, 15 or our age were playing fucking Call of Duty and shit like that. Like, I got kids that I teach in Taekwondo who are, like, freaking 7 and 8, and they're talking about Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, so these kids are a little bit immature. But when you think about it, those are also video games, so they don't really affect the child as much. It still affects them, but not as much.
Yeah.
The thing that I wanted to do with the Ventura Chronicles was kind of start soft, okay? Start soft and kind of work my way up into that kind of mature area. And I think the sample that I sent out to everybody was the sample of book 4, where I think you got the fight sequence and stuff like that.
Yeah, there was a fight sequence in there.
Yeah, so I wanted that to be like, book 4 is, like I said, it's the closing of everything. Everything, all the loose ends that I have in this series, they all come to a close in this book. So everything, it has to come to a close. I can't leave any loose ends open. So I wanted it to be a little bit more mature because, like I said, with the sequel series coming out next year, our characters are going to start to mature. And this is kind of like that doorway to them becoming like adults. Like, they're becoming, you know, fathers, mothers. They're not in high school anymore. They're full-fledged adults. Some of them are going to college. Some of them started a family, stuff like that. And I wanted the audience to see that, like, you know, there's a lot of fighting going down. There's a lot of, you know, bloodshed. There's a lot of, you know, action that's going to be taking place in book 4. So what I wanted to convey in that story is, like, you know, everything's coming to an end. Everything in all of the books that I've written, they're coming to an end, and I wanted it to close it with a lot more anticipation, a lot more action. Because if you read book 3 leaves off on a very big cliffhanger. It's huge. A lot of people think that, you know, our heroes won't be able to come back from that. And book 4 is kind of like all of their struggles, all of their adversities is all conveyed in book 4.
Oh, and I'm getting so many spoilers right now. So many.
So giving it away, but they're all online. I'm not trying not to give anything away, but like I said, book 4 is like I said, it is to where the reader is going to read and they're going to literally feel like what the audience is doing. So when I first started writing book 4, I literally had to take myself out of my writing, me writing the story, and actually put myself into the story itself to kind of see what kind of emotions our heroes are going to face, what kind of, you know, challenges they're going to be going through, to kind of convey everything, like their feelings, their emotions, to the reader. Like, it's one thing reading it. If you're not feeling any type of, you know, sadness, joy, anger, anything by reading this book, then I'm not doing my job as a writer to help you guys. So I'm going to ask you a question. How did you like that fight thing? What did you feel when you were reading it?
I thought it was pretty intense because me coming into it, I thought it was for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading it because I was like, oh, this guy's like writing kids' books, you know, and I wanted to just, you know, just see what you were up to and what's going on with you. But as I was reading, I'm like, whoa, this does not seem like kids at all. See? Or like a very perverse tie, like a version of William's kids' books, you know. But at the same time, I wasn't surprised. I agree with you. Like, kids today are very different. Well, I wouldn't say very different because I was pretty, I wouldn't say mature, but definitely, aware of a lot of things that maybe I shouldn't have been, aware to, you know? Yeah. And mm-hmm. even though, like, it was definitely not kid oriented, it was definitely not out of their realm. Or yeah. not over their heads or anything. And most importantly, I think that's the most important part, is that a lot of people, authors, and even parents, they think too little of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Their kids are really up to date, know what's up, and
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we give enough credit to these fucking kids, these little monsters of ours.
They know too much, to be honest. And, like, I see people that we went to high school with start popping out babies. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, dude.
I see you as, like, a 15-year-old.
me?
No, I mean, everybody I went to high school with in general. Like, I know a lot of people, they're either married or they're having kids. I am neither or. I'm not married. I'm in a committed relationship, but don't have kids. I'm not ready for kids yet. Okay, so. But, you know, going back to what you were saying about the book, about the story, it, again, with book four, I wanted to break those boundaries. Like, I wanted to break, you know, yeah, it's a kid's book and stuff like that, but I already knew by writing book four that there was going to be more. I just wasn't sure if I was going to actually write it, but I wanted to set it up for if I was going to go forward with more than action, that, you know, the book four would set that up. For that. So I wanted to break boundaries. I wanted to just release the freaking beast, dude, and just have this book, you know, have villains in there that just don't give a fuck and just kill and do whatever they wanted without any remorse. And that's what literally fuels the story, because that is why you get these kids. Let's take, for example, we get superpowers, we go out and be superheroes. We go out there and we fight crime and stuff like that. There's always going to be that one villain that's going to challenge us to either cross that line or don't. And that's what book four is. They get that opportunity to choose whether or not they're going to cross that line and do what needs to be done in a inappropriate way, or they're going to stick to their morals and do what needs to be done the right way.
So would you say that the book, in a way, as you've kind of matured over time, so has the characters? Or
yeah.
I mean, on top of that, how much of your life is in this book or in the Chronicles?
Quite a bit, not a lot. I know a lot of authors, when they write
obviously
books,
I don't see you walking around with armor.
No, but I would, don't get me wrong. If I could develop some armor like that, and I would do it hands down. I mean, who would? If you had an Iron Man suit in your closet, would you not fucking wear that shit every day?
Probably not an Iron Man suit, but if I had, like, a really hot, you know, Batman suit, I'm putting that shit on for sure.
Wear that shit every day. Like, if I had anybody have a favorite superhero and they had their suit,
Batman, guys, all the way. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I would wear a Batman suit. Not gonna lie.
I'm seeing a Spider-Man thing hanging, like, right behind you.
Superman.
Yeah. Talk about being gay.
No.
Peter Parker.
No, you know the new Spider-Man is a black kid now. You know that, right?
Yeah. We all can't be perfect.
Yeah, well, that's
too bad. It's the guy who plays Chris from Everybody Hates Chris, right?
I don't know, maybe. I don't know if they're actually making a movie with him featuring a new Spider-Man. If they are, I got to go and do some research and post it on Twitter. Hey.
Well, this guy.
There were a little bit of aspects of my life going into there. Like, I know in book three, when I was training to be a firefighter, I went through a really funny... it wasn't funny. It was funny for me because it didn't happen to me. It was a little awkward, though, because if you read book three, the main character, Dai, he's training. He wants to be a firefighter. So naturally, if you're trying to be a firefighter, you go into the Explorer program. So same with police officers.
And it's super intense, too, especially for firefighters.
Yeah, I did that for about 2 years over here in Clark County. So I was an Explorer for about 2 years. Had a lot of fun. I really didn't stick with it because our county got hit with budget cuts. So everything from, like, the ride along to actually staying at the station got cut. So we weren't able to do it anymore. So,
well,
like,
are ride alongs expensive? Or?
Yeah, apparently they got, because I think most of the firefighters got paid overtime to do it. So they could.
Oh, I see.
So, There was a part in when I was being becoming an explorer, literally like on my first day, what they do is they round up all the new explorers and they kind of give them introductions. And, you know, you got to tell your name, how old you are, what school you go to, where you're going, stuff like that, why you're here. And I stood next to a kid whose reason for being an explorer was because his girlfriend thought it was hot and sexy. And the whole class laughed, but the firefighters were like, "You gotta be shitting me. You need to tell me that you're here for that shit." And they roasted his ass all day. And I thought it was they made him do push-ups until he couldn't even lift his arms anymore. So I actually put that sequence in a book. When you get to it in book three, it actually happened. I changed the name to make, you know, everybody feel like, you know, can feel their identities in real life. But everything you'll read in that sequence actually happened, except for the giant dark monster shadow that popped up later on.
But well, thanks for the blooper over here. But
hey, I'm just saying, that's one of the things that I like to write. I like to keep it like as close to like
reality.
Yeah, reality is possible because you know what it was like when that thing happened. You're not just making shit up, and you know exactly how to convey those feelings and those details very well because it happened to you. So naturally, when you write about it,
it gets kind of personal.
It's kind of exactly so.
Let me just point out something right here because I've known you since high school, and you were always like a very polite, nice guy, well rounded. A little bit geeky, but always fun, you know?
I'm still a geek. No, man, I still collect comic books. I got a whole shoebox though. I still got my Yu-Gi-Oh cards, man.
Hey, man. I still have them all, too. All right? I have them locked in a briefcase.
Yep.
With my lightsabers.
I remember you came to school with those, and I was just like, "Are you fucking serious right now? Give me one. I can play."
Give me one. No, dude. Hey, man, that shit is still fucking good, man.
Dude, do you remember that Star Wars rap we did when we were on retreat?
Oh, yeah, we did do a Star Wars rap, didn't we? And you were Yoda. You were Yoda, dude. Fuck.
That was back in the day, man. That was a lot of fun.
Well, what I was going to say is, apparently you went to Vegas, right? You studied, you wanted to be an engineer, right?
Yes, sir.
And then it turns out that you wanted to be a firefighter as well, right? Uh-huh. Something where, and also on your spare time, you also do Taekwondo. Do you teach or are you coaching or what is that?
We do a little bit of both. Like, I teach. Like, I'll go in and help teach class. I coach from time to time whenever there's a tournament. And I'm also an athlete, too. So I'm trying to I try and train at least maybe 4 or 5 times a week, but sometimes that doesn't happen. So certain priorities get in the way of me actually doing it. So
I'm pretty sure you have plenty of stuff going on.
So there's a lot of... Especially when it comes to training, because my coach, he's a second division coach, so he's the one that would, if he wanted to, go and teach or coach the Olympic team, the Olympics. So he's really hardcore, and when you go and train with him, you really have to mentally prepare for what's about to happen. Yeah, you're here by your free will. I'm ready to go, but if you're not mentally ready, then that shit is going to be hell.
Well, it's a fight, you know? I mean, you're about to get into...
Well, it's not the fight itself, it's the conditioning
and
drills that you have to do. Like, and they're not drills, like, really. Like, I would try, this is how bad it is. We would go on Saturdays, like, usually every Saturday in the morning, and go run, like, flights of stairs. Singles, doubles, we'll get there, stuff like that. I had a girl, before I started dating my current girlfriend, she wanted to go run stairs with me. And I'm like, I don't think you're ready for this. This is not for the faint of heart. You got to finish. So she ran about like maybe 3 sets and almost fucking died. And I have to tell myself that I train at another level than most people. Most people don't train like you do. Like, my cardio is up there. My endurance is up there. Everybody that want to train with me, I have to tell them, like, look, like, we're going to train, but you got to be sure this is what you're going to do because this is going to fucking suck if you don't do it. The way we train is to where when we actually have a tournament to go to, we don't get tired or exhausted while we fight. That's how hard we train. We train for that motion to where when you're in the ring and you're fighting, you see your other opponent just puffing and puffing, can't bring his legs up, can't kick, can't do anything. And we're just like, oh, okay. So, you know, we've been training for this for like years now. So,
my point was, but you hit on several points that I want to touch on. One, that you obviously want to do something almost like a hero-esque kind of feel to it, where you are trying to help others, teach others, and take care of others in some way or another, right? Firefighter, engineer, coach over here. And now you're also writing about something very similar, superheroes, or a superhero, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously superheroes are big influence in your life, but like, what got you into all of that? What inspires you on all those things?
Well, I mean, for me personally, it's like when you come into this world, what I've learned is that a lot of people, they think that they're entitled to a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, you guys look at all the famous people like Will Smith, JD, Beyonce. It's like, wow, I wish I was Will Smith, JD, and Beyonce. When in actuality, you can be Will Smith, JD, and Beyonce. Like, those people are going to leave, obviously, a mark in this world whenever they decide to pass on. And that's the kind of thing that I kind of, like, open my mind to. It's like, you come into this world with absolutely nothing. It's up to you to leave this world giving it something. You got these talents. You got these gifts. God gave them to you for a reason. So, obviously, you need to share that with the world. You know, you just don't want to keep that, you know, conveyed to yourself. A lot of people, like myself, I joined a group of like awesome people, from entrepreneurs to other writers to, you know, other athletes like myself and stuff like that. And, you know, I listen to what they want to do. And some of the stuff they do is crazy. You know, like, it's awesome and stuff like that. A lot of people, they don't have the mindset to do it, to do those things. And it's not hard to change your mindset from thinking one way to thinking to another. Like, before I decided to write a book or anything like that, my mindset was being the person that wanted to read the book. When I finally finished reading that Harry Potter book, I kind of wanted to be like, well, I want to be the person that actually writes the book. I want people to know my story about my characters and stuff like that. And that's what usually like flips the switch for me, and it can flip the switch for anyone.
Did you ever think that maybe you, like, after reading that book, you were like, what the fuck? I could write a better book than this.
No, I didn't. I was very humble about it because I knew all about J.K. Rowling and her struggle and where she came from. So, you know, I'm just like, wow, you know, it was more of like, if she can do it, then I can do it. And that's the same with anybody. Like, I know people who like dropped albums and they're successful. My buddy that I grew up with back in L.A., like, he started his own record studio. I mean, if you can think it, you can do it. And there's a lot of secrets to success that I discovered over the years that literally these people who are doing these things right now, like Jay-Z, Beyonce, even P. Diddy, and all these, you know, top-notch actors, they have tapped into the secrets of success. And it's not hard to tap into those secrets because they're all doing it. It's not hard. The thing about it is that it takes a certain kind of perseverance and mindset to actually achieve those things. Like, the person that I was 10 years ago is not the person that I am today. I know a lot more. I'm able to do a lot more. I understand a lot more. And that's what people need to understand, is that you're going to have to change as a person instead of being the same person that you are to do something. And the motto that I live by is, don't wish things were easier, wish you were better. Always getting more and more information and not quitting because when something gets hard. The higher you're trying to strive for, the higher you're trying to go, you're going to expect it to be more adversity. You're going to have a lot more people saying, no, you can't do it. That's stupid. That's dumb. It's not going to work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're going to get a lot more people that you're going to join forces with to actually, who have the same dream that you do, who want to do the same thing that you do. And when you surround yourself with those people that have your same mindset, and I guarantee you what's going to happen is that you're going to what you're trying to do, and it's actually going to become a reality for you too. And that's what I did. I linked up with those people, those entrepreneurs, those other writers, people who are, you know, starting their own businesses and literally following their dreams. I linked up with those people and saw what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got the idea. Like, if these guys can do it too, And some of them are fucking dumb as shit. I'm not going to lie. They're dumb as shit, but you don't need to be smart to make money.
Well, on top of that, I think just to piggyback on that, it would be consistency. That people, you know, you the moment people... They get all inspired listening to that, right? Which they should be, because that's what you're saying is the truth. Yeah. But the moment they hit like a downfall or they fall into a, you know, a setback, they just let it go. They just lose all hope and they forget that. I mean, you have to just get back up and get back on the horse, keep going, you know, keep trying. And, you know, failure is just part of the journey to success, right?
Exactly. That's one of the secrets. Like, if you fail once, like I said, the higher you're going to strive, the more failure you're going to fall into. And that's what literally makes some of the most best entrepreneurs that I've known, that I've met, have literally fallen on their face well over 1,000 times, maybe even more. The idea is literally getting back up and figuring out what you did wrong and learning from those mistakes. Like, when I was first selling these books, I had no idea what the hell I was doing. No clue. Like, how am I supposed to market to an audience whose back is literally turned towards me? Who's going to peek over their shoulder and try and see what I'm doing? No one. No one's going to do that. You have to give them something to say, hey, look at me. I'm over here. Because I see a lot of people who are on social media who are trying to become musicians or who are trying to become the next big R&B pop thing and stuff like that. And I look at their Facebook status and their Twitter status, and it's basically like them. They're screaming at people, hey, my new album is up on Pandora or stuff like that. Go listen to it. No one's listening to you right now. Mainly because when you're trying to sell something, people want something in return for them to go listen to yourself. But yeah, I go listen to yourself, but what do I get for it? And I know that sounds kind of selfish, but a lot of people, they don't understand that whole mental thing. It's mental. If I'm going to do something for you, you got to do something for me. You know? Yeah. If I'm going to give you a free sample chapter of my book, obviously I want you to read it. I'm just going to leave this alone. But that's what I usually want. Like, if I'm going to give you something, you got to promise me you're going to read it. And that's usually, like, my idea. Like, if I'm going to give away a free book, obviously you're going to read it, because otherwise, why would you go get a free book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole, like, key to becoming successful is knowing your audience and always giving them something. Giving them something. You always got to give them something. Like, Gary Vaynerchuk, you got to jab them. And then when you're ready to do that right hook, you plug them with a free book promotion or a free sample chapter or something like that. But getting up there to that level to where you want to be, like, my dream is for the Zentown Chronicles to become a movie, you know, the next best-selling, you know, not only series, which it already is, but to be discovered by Universal or Paramount or something like that and actually become a movie.
Well, you know what I was going to say was that... I can totally see this as a really graphic graphic novel cartoon, you know, where, you know, just that fight scene would be an awesome fucking cartoon scene to see on, like, let's just say Adult Swim or something, you know, like late at night, something where adults or teenagers could go see it, you know, I think that would be a mini series of sorts, you know.
Yeah, I've actually thought about doing something like that, but I would need to literally seclude myself for like a year and actually full on work on it. Like, I can't have any outside interaction. But like, I've always been taught to think big. Like, cartoons are great. I mean, taking a whole comic standpoint is also another step forward to the same time becoming a movie later on. But like I said, the higher you're going to strive, the more you're going to fail. And a lot of people, like you said, when they fail, they just usually give up on things. They don't usually try and figure out what they did wrong and what they can do better, which is, it's kind of sad, but that's the way the world is operating right now, which is why we have very few entrepreneurs and very few people coming out of the woodwork with new ideas and new ways of doing things. Like, I get people all the time, like, how were you able to write a book? I was like, I just sat down and did it. I stopped talking about it and I fucking did it. I mean, it's not hard. Like, if you are writing a book, and let's say you commit to simply just writing a page a day. That's a page. A page a day for a year. At the end of that year, you're going to have 365 pages written. I mean, that's pretty much the average length of a book these days anyway. I didn't do it
How long?
Huh?
What's average?
Average is about 300 pages for a book. That's how average it is. So if you sat down and wrote a page for a day, you, by the end of that year, you would have written nearly 400 pages in a book. And a lot of people, when you break it down like that, a lot of people start to understand, like, oh, that's awesome. But what's going to happen is that you're going to write that one page, and you're going to be like, I don't want to stop here. I want to keep on going. And that one page a day is going to turn into 2 pages a day, and that 2 pages is going to turn into 4 to 8. That's how I used to write. I used to be able to write at least 4 or 5 chapters a day. And my chapters are about 20, 30 pages long. So you can just imagine how much I was writing. I did like 100 and some pages a day, literally from when I got up to when I went to bed. And I didn't go to bed until about 2 or 3 in the morning because I was so focused. I was so like into what I was writing to get this story literally out of my head. Because as I was writing the second, third, and fourth book, I didn't have a plot written. They weren't written at all. A lot of what you see in a final product is not what I originally had. It changed over the course of me writing. I had to take some stuff out, put some stuff in. I had to twist some stuff usually to make it fit into what I was doing. So a lot of the final draft that you're going to be reading is not what it was before. It was always changing. And, you know, once you get into it, once you become passionate about something and you show people that passion about whatever it is you're trying to do, naturally they're going to want to see what you're doing right off the bat. So that's what I did, and that's how I got my following, because I kept on talking about it. I kept on talking about it. Yeah, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book. Then it turned into, yeah, I'm writing a book. Yeah, I'm writing a book. Once I decided to just shut up and just do it, that's when all that came out, because you got people, as soon as you don't talk about it, people just assume that you just gave up. And you're like, I'm not going to write a book. But I have people come up to me, hey, man, you still writing that book? Yeah, I'm on my 4th one already. The others are already published. I'm writing the last one right now. And they're like, whoa, really? I'm like, yeah, you can find them online. And they're so stoked that they know somebody who actually wrote a book.
Who's actually doing it.
Yeah, who's actually doing it. There's a lot of people out there that look at me and see what I'm doing, and they want to peek over the fence and see what I'm doing. And I have no problem. Like, I'm going to open a book and ask me any questions you want. But when I'm working, I'm usually quiet about it. Like, very, very quiet. Because the thing is that a lot of people, what they're going to do is that they're going to talk about it, and then when it gets too rough and it gets too hard, they quit. I don't usually like talking about future projects that I'm working on, because if not written in stone yet, if I'm actually going to do it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like to keep projects and ideas kind of close to the chest until I'm already close to finishing, or I need some help, you know?
Yeah.
So,
exactly. Like,
yeah.
Well, my comic book, like, I started this comic book literally 2 years ago. I didn't think that, you know, I started doing it in 2012, and then it got shelved because I wanted to finish school. I wanted to get out and, you know, have more time to do it. So I actually picked it up about 4, maybe 6 months ago and started doing it over again. And I've already completed about 3 or 4 issues. And I decided, you know, this is probably going to happen. If it's not going to happen, then we have some problems. But, you know, a lot of people are receiving it well. Like I said, after so many panels that I do, I take a picture and post it on Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat and all that stuff. And it's getting a lot of favors, getting a lot of likes. And a lot of people are getting excited.
I've seen some of it, yeah, on Instagram too.
Yeah, a lot of people are getting excited about what I'm doing. So just telling me that right there, like, I got to finish this series sooner or later. Unfortunately, right now, I ran out of paper, so I've kind of been in
all your creativity stumped by a trip to Staples.
Yeah, I gotta go get more paper. So I gotta go. I'm probably gonna go tomorrow and pick up a couple more notebooks, and because this is special paper that is not just like regular printed paper, it's like actual like comic book paper that can be used to draw comic books. So like, I do the penciling, I do some of the inking sometimes, and then I just keep the cycle going between me and my team, and we just do it up, we just fix it up, and you know, like I said, it looks like it's coming to an end, but I'm really excited for fall 2015 when, you know, this is going to be launched. I'm going to be doing a lot more stuff this fall. I'm actually brainstorming new ideas that's going to not only get the Zentai more exposure, but open the door for new things. So, like, marketing, I'm not going to lie, it's hard. But you learn a lot, especially from reading books. You read those books of people who give you marketing ideas. You watch videos. get ideas, and you kind of brainstorm, like, oh my God, I could do a contest, like, in 2 months to get people to do it. I'm actually thinking about giving away books 1, 2, 3, and 4 for free. I just need to figure out when I'm going to do it and how I'm going to start promoting it. Okay, so be on the lookout for that for sure, because I want to do that before the comic book comes out. A lot of people are interested in seeing offer books being free, because you can get offer books for free. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? You know what I mean?
Get a whole series. Free books. I like free shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's free. Who wants to do that? Even though it's 99 cents, you're saving a dollar.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to ask you was how much, because you're obviously doing a shit ton of stuff all every day, every week. And how much is time management really essential in your, like, how is it done?
It's like, for me,
because let me just tell you right now that, I mean, I try to do time management and I've got a lot of shit going on too. And I literally find no time for myself. Yeah. Like, when I get home, I'm like, I'm going to just smoke a bowl of weed and then knock the fuck out.
What I do is that I usually, like, prioritize. Like, if I plan to do something, I usually don't do it because I know I'm like, fuck, I got to do this. I'm not going to get it done, stuff like that. I usually just do things, like, spur of the moment kind of thing. Like, when I was writing the book, it was more or less, damn it, I've been at work all day, but I want to go see my characters. I want to go see what they're up to. And that's how I'll get into the writing. Like, I'll start, like, proofreading stuff. I'm like, oh, this is really good. All right, we're on chapter, what, 8? Let's start writing. I mean, that's how I would usually write. And I can knock out 3 or 4 chapters easily in a night, just writing it up and writing out. The thing with the comic book, though, is very, very different. And it's a little bit harder than just writing out, because you're not just writing a story. You're actually drawing out the things and sequences. So the way I would usually draw the comic book is I would already have a scene in my head and what I wanted to do, and I would draw it out. But the moment that particular, like, maybe 4 or 5 panels were done, I was usually stuck. And that's when I usually just call it a quit, because I'm not going to sit here for an hour and look at a piece of paper and figure out what the fuck to draw. I usually go do things and kind of go over what I've drawn in my head and come back to it later. So as for time management, like, my time management, I think of this way. You have 24 hours in a day. Oprah has 24 hours in a day. Jay-Z has 24 hours in a day. No one has 25 hours in a day. What I usually do is, like, I usually cut back on sleeping. Like, I would be in here either really late at night, like around 1 or 2 in the morning, or really early in the morning around 5 or 6 o'clock in my office in here doing what I need to do to finish. So,
doesn't, like, that cut into your, like, training, your physical and health?
It does. It kind of does, but usually I will get that stuff done. Like, I would, let's say, like, for example, I wake up at 6 in the morning. This is a typical day. Mm-hmm. When I'm trying to get something done, I wake up around 6 in the morning. I'm in the office until about 9 or 10 o'clock. I eat lunch. Depending on if I'm tired, I'll take a nap, because I usually don't train until the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will usually do that, but recently I've been training later. Because I got my afternoon pretty much booked up for other things. So I usually train at, like, maybe 11:30 noon, and then usually come back to the office and do things like that. So, I mean, depending on how I feel would determine if I'm going to train. But most of the time I am training, whether I like it or not. But on top of all of that, if this is the priority, which it is, and I'm, like, on a roll, and I'm just knocking out panels like there's no tomorrow, then sometimes I would choose finishing up work here and before I go train, or just completely skipping workout altogether just to finish up the panel. So I can say, hey, I knocked out a whole issue today. I'm on issue 6, 7. And
it's kind of worth it then, you know. Yeah. When you're on a roll, you can't, when you're on that flow, that mental flow, then you can't really interrupt it.
Yeah.
Or it's a bad idea too, because sometimes when I'm on a flow, like, I don't do, like, this right here, this is just a hobby of mine. You know, I just enjoy doing it, and I like to post it up and, you know, just talk to people. But what I do during the day, I mean, I do, like, I do a lot of, like, financial analysis kind of stuff.
Okay.
So once I'm, like, in, like, stuck inside a program doing a project, or if I'm doing something, you know, then I don't even eat, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I'm stuck there, and I can't. It's just like a, I wouldn't say OCD, but definitely an infatuation of trying to get the job done.
Yeah, and that's, And I like that idea because did you know that Beyonce actually hires people to tear her when it eats because she's usually on her grind, like, for days, and she needs to be reminded to eat. Did you know that?
She doesn't have an alarm?
No. She pays somebody, like, thousands
of dollars. She should get an iPhone. She should get an iPhone. There's lots of alarms. Just use Siri. Be like, Siri, remind me to eat at 12.
Yeah. Like a lot of other people, like when I work, I usually don't have my phone with me because I don't like to be distracted or anything like that. My phone is usually in the other room. So I guess it's the same with Beyonce. It's like instead of having a fucking phone, I'm just going to have an actual person to tell me when to eat or something like that. But I've had times to where I didn't eat for a long period of time. And I'm like, oh shit, it's like midnight. Last time I ate was like 8 in the morning, shit like that. And I'm hungry, but usually I would get up and go get me some food and then come back. But I mean, doing what I do and doing a lot of work and like random spurts of time can really produce like this last week or so, not this week, or the week before last, I was lazy. Like, I didn't do shit because when you go grind hard and you're doing what you need to do, like for hours at a time, every single day, after that, you're like, okay, I need a break. And that break that you want to take for a day turns into two turns into three. You're sleeping like for hours and shit like that. And to me, that's okay because as long as you're getting work done and you're doing it in spurts, like how I do it, then to me, that's fine. But I know a lot of entrepreneurs that they literally don't sleep. They don't do anything that doesn't pertain to work. Like very rarely, like for holidays, they would just spend time with their family. But I know entrepreneurs that literally travel 24/7. They're going from town to town to promote their brand, stuff like that, and doing all the stuff, and they don't need to sleep. Like, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, but my thinking is that I need sleep. And I've had times where for an entire week, I have just been exhausted between doing, you know, artwork and writing and drawing of comic books to training in between every break. It gets exhausting. So I would usually find myself sleeping for literally like a nap for me is literally like 6-7 hours when I'm trying to recuperate or trying to refresh my mind. Like I usually would go to sleep for 4 hours, go to bed at 2, wake up at 6, and start work that way. And then you do that for like a week or two, your body will start to feel the effect. So that's how I used to work. That's how whenever I'm on a grind, I would do it, and sometimes I wouldn't even be able to sleep because my brain would be racing for new ideas. I would say, fuck it, I'm not going to sleep. I'm just going to get up and finish it. But sometimes it'll be like, my brain isn't turning, so I need to go to sleep to do that. But you do that for 2 weeks at a time, and you just completely going balls to the wall and doing it and knocking them out. Mm-hmm. Your body, it gets really soft.
Well, there's a, I forgot what book it was, but there's a common sense between great companies and great entrepreneurs where there's this huge infatuation where I honestly believe if you want to be successful, you got to be a little bit insane because there is that obsession involved with it. Not, I mean, and what I mean by successful, I don't mean like, yay, you know, I own a house and, you know, I have a good job and stuff like that. Obviously that's successful, but what I'm talking about is grandiosely successful, like a Steve Jobs, you know, or Bill Gates. Steve Jobs was like a piece of shit was a great person overall, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And obviously an awesome CEO and led Apple out of what could have been the brink of fucking, you know, annihilation, right? But from what I understand, he was just completely obsessed with his work, and he would be upset with people who wasn't as obsessed as he was.
Yeah.
And lack of sleep is a big thing about that, too. It's like it's a common trait.
I don't usually, like, if I'm going to work with someone, they need to have the same drive as I do. Like, if I'm like, okay, we got to get this thing done in, like, the next 2 months, let's grind. And usually the speed of the pack is decided by the alpha. So if I'm telling people, like, we got to get this done, we got to get the coloring done, we got to get the cover done, usually, it's me. I'm the alpha. Like, I'm usually telling people what to do and how to do it. But sometimes it doesn't end up that way because I will be the head of the pack, and the pack will slow down because usually I'm working too hard or too fast. They can't keep up, or I'm just completely mentally and physically exhausted, and they're just like, okay, what do we do next kind of thing. So I usually, whenever I get things done, I usually just lock myself in the room and do it before I tell anybody about it. You know, that way to where I'm not hindering the workflow and stuff like that. Because like I do, Steve Jobs didn't train like an Olympic athlete, I'm pretty sure. So he had all the time in the world to sit in his garage and build computers all day. Like, I train as an athlete, and coming back to doing something like that, like drawing and stuff like that, it takes a lot out of you. So
yeah.
Usually I'm on fire. I'm like going forward. I'm doing Skype calls with my team. I'm letting them know what's going on, stuff like that. Other times, I won't even speak to my team for a week or two. And I'm like, oh, shit, I have a team. I have to call them and let them give me an update on what they're doing so I can plan accordingly. And, like, I'm not usually thinking that way. I'm usually, like, focused on what I need to do and do it like that. I'm usually not even focused on, you know, what issue they're doing for getting the inking done or how much of the coloring has been done, where's the cover looking like, stuff like that. I'm not usually worried about that because usually I usually take care of all that. But when you have other people working with you, it's kind of hard. It kind of hinders a lot because you're the alpha of your back. You have to literally not stay on in the micromanage because I fucking hate micromanaging. I hate it when people do it to me. I don't do it to other people. Mm-hmm. If you give me something that looks like crap, I'm going to tell you, dude, this looks like shit. Dude, what have you been doing for the past 2.5 weeks? Like, it needs to be done better. Or if it looks great, I'm going to tell you exactly what I like about it and I'm going to take it. Like, I'm not going to like make you feel like shit like Steve Jobs did. I'm going to show you, like, if it's something that looks like shit, I'm going to tell you, man, okay, so this is what you can do better. This is what I used to do. You can do this too. You can do it or not. But most of the time, just to kind of cut out the middleman, I usually don't work with people when it comes to developing new story arcs, new ideas. Like, when it comes to the right things, like, I don't do it.
I'm kind of the same way. I'm definitely very obtuse once I start telling you what I want. Like, if I see something that obviously this was done half-assedly, yeah, then I'm going to be like, you need to do this again. Yeah, and, you know, right, you need to put the effort into it. I mean, I don't like to talk down to people, but fuck, man, some people need to be get some fire on themselves, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like, I'm sorry, it kind of sounds like you need like an assistant, man, somebody to tell you like a scheduler or something, man.
Yeah, no, like, my brain is wired differently. If you give me a schedule, I will not follow that shit. Like,
really?
I don't know why.
No, I had to put myself on the schedule because I was, like, rambling for shit. Like, that's why I wake up so early now, too, because it's, like, there's not enough time during the day. And, mm-hmm, you know, you got to add some little, you know, smoke me out time, you know, just yeah, to enjoy life. But,
and again, like, people ask me, like, how do you get so much done if you don't have a schedule? And I was like, there's 24 hours in a day. Like, you could decide to be a vampire or you could decide to be a daywalker. It depends on you. What do you want to do? How much of it you want to get done? But I knew for the comic book, I wasn't going to be able to get that done by myself because when I originally came up with the idea and started doing it in 2012, mm-hmm, I didn't understand that it was the drawing. And I didn't understand that it was the inking. I didn't understand that it was the cover and actually putting in words and coloring. That was the biggest one, was the coloring, because I had no idea how to work Photoshop or anything like that. So obviously I needed somebody who knew how to do that. Eventually I did learn Photoshop because there's going to be over 200 panels that need to be colored. So I'm not going to let my homegirl do all the coloring by herself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it my way. But I understand, and the one thing I'm excited when it comes to working with other people, especially when it comes to drawing artwork, is that they have their own style of doing things. And I love to see other people drawing like different styles of their artwork and being able to convey my story, my characters, and the style that they do it in. That's why I'm so excited with working with her, because I don't rush her, because I know that coloring takes a long ass time. I give her the panels. I'm like, I need this done before September. Remember, you got 3 more on the way, so make sure you do it. And I like to split it up. I don't like to have people just doing it. I like to be the one that literally helping people do it, because the people that I work with, they're not programmers, entrepreneurs. Let's get that straight. There's people that are programmed as employees, and there's people that are programmed as entrepreneurs. People who are programmed as employees, and especially if you're paying them, they're going to do exactly what you need them to do. Entrepreneurs, it's different, because you're usually coming up with the ideas and you're telling those people what to do. I'm programmed as an entrepreneur. I was programmed as an employee, but being programmed as an entrepreneur, you kind of get a sense of what needs to be done, and you kind of get a sense of, okay, well, I know her artwork is good. I know his artwork is good. okay, I'm going to try and see if they want to work with me and be able to get that exposure. So you work with someone who already has exposure, naturally what's going to happen, they're going to get exposure too.
Well, I was going to ask you is, you know, when you're working with others, how can you communicate your vision to them? Or do you just tell them some points and then see where they go with that? Or are you kind of telling them, no, I kind of see it like this? Or do you take in some of their criticisms or their ideas?
I'm always open for criticism because I'm not the perfect bunch. Like, I'm just kind of doing it the best way I know how. So if I get, like I know a lot of comic book artists. I usually go to them for advice, like, how can I make this thing pop more, blah, 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 and all that stuff. And they usually give me some pretty good advice. And I take it from them because these guys, they draw their own comic books, they do everything, and they sell them. So I'm going to take advice from those guys because that's exactly what I want to do. But as for my team, like, when it comes down to, like, coloring and stuff like that, like with my, with Danae, her name is Danae or Danny, I think it's Danae, that's how you spell it. Anyways, when I'm dealing with her, I know she has her own style of coloring, and I know she does a lot more of a better job than I do because I self-taught myself Photoshop and how to work it. So I'm not going to tell her how to do something on Photoshop when I know for a fact that her artwork is going to be looking better than mine. Okay, I just kind of let her do her own thing. Like, I give her the color schemes, like the color of the armor, the skin tones to the main characters, and I give her all that stuff. And she does it, but I want her to do it her own way because I'm not going to sit and go, this looks ugly, the color scheme is off, blah, blah, blah. As long as she gets the color of the armor down that corresponds with the book and the color scheme to the tone of her skin and the hair color and the eye color, as long as she gets all that right, I really don't give a fuck how she does everything else.
Okay.
She does it in her own way, that's great. I really don't do it. Most of the story is coming from me, so I'm not going to, you know, talk to them about how the story is. If I'm having a little issue on how the story should be unfolded, then I will grab them and talk to them, okay? So this is where I'm at. I'm stuck at this point. What do you guys think should happen at this point? And I'll take their ideas and usually come up with a solution. But most of the story is already written when it comes to comic books. The penciling is coming from me, so the whole perspective and everything is coming from me. The whole inking thing is really simple. You just take a pen and shade in all the stuff that I shaded in with a pencil, with a marker. And then, like I said, with the coloring, she has her style, I have my style. Obviously, I'm going to say this right now, her style is a lot more better than mine. Okay, because like I said, I taught myself Photoshop. I'm not really good with doing it, but I'm learning as I go. So, but she's been using Photoshop for a while now, and I've seen some of her work online, and it's amazing. It's fantastic. That's why I chose her over everybody that I know who knows how to work Photoshop because I've seen her artwork. Yeah, you say I work Photoshop, but if I haven't seen any of your work, it's kind of me doing an indirect interview. When I was looking for a color, that's what I was doing. I was going to people that I know who did Photoshop, and I was comparing what the pictures look like. And
it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to really tell who can do what because I mean, so many people copy from each other too when they you know.
Mm-hmm. But I know her for sure that her work is original because she would come and ask me, like, how does this look? Because she's a writer, too. She writes this book, and we kind of swap ideas and stuff like that. Oh, well, you should probably do this a little bit more. Or oh, she'll tell me, oh, you should probably write this in because you need to get a little more action. And we swap ideas. So with her, it's like, okay, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your Photoshop thing. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's your thing.
I was like, she won't tell me, like, how my book should go or anything like that. Because I've already written it out, but I will take criticism and advice from those people who have already written the book. That's like me telling you, you shouldn't do a podcast, you do a video. Like, well, you know shit about video. I don't know if you do or not, but at the same time, you do your podcast and obviously you do a good job at it, right?
I try to. I don't know if I do a good job at it.
I'm not going to tell you how to do your podcast because I don't know shit about podcasts. I thought I was like kind of chapstick when you tell me, what the fuck is a podcast? I have to look it up.
Are you serious?
Like, oh. Yeah, I don't know what the
come on, man.
Podcast.
You're the one marketing out there on Twitter.
I've never done a podcast.
You never heard of one?
I can do video blogs. I can do that shit. That's easy. I can just put on my phone and start talking about random shit. But
well, you know what I was thinking of doing was actually because every once in a while I do like a group. Like some of my friends over here, and we just do like this big podcast episode where we get drunk, smoke weed, and just talk about politics and whatever, you know. And honestly, like what I was thinking was, what's that thing through Twitter where you can actually record it? Huh?
Periscope.
Yeah. What I was thinking of doing was actually broadcasting that, you know, and just have it out there while, you know, we're just all shit faced and we're just, you know, getting hammered and talking. But, you know, just something like that. You, do you come out here in Cali every once in a while, or what? Do you just stay out in Vegas now?
I use, because I do network marketing, so I do a lot of traveling, going from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
I usually do have some people to meet in California, but I've already done all my traveling that I need to do for the year. Mm-hmm. I might end up doing some later on, but I just got back from Arizona like 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw that.
So I've been jumping around like a lot, and to be honest, I probably won't be out in California until maybe about August to see my mom. But my main priority is getting this comic book done. So before I do any type of traveling, I want this to be somewhat finished so we can release it, because most comic book people, they don't release their issues by the week, they do it by the month. But I'm doing it different. I'm doing it by the week because I want to get this done. I want to get it out. I want people to be able to download it and read it, or go buy it and read it. So that way I can get started with the next phase of what I'm trying to do. So,
well, it looks like you really look after your fucking followers, man. Like, it looks like that's good. That's always good to see that, you think about the people who are actually going to read the book. You know, it's not about how it is to make the most amount of money. Obviously, I mean, you put out your book out on Amazon at such a low price. You really want people to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like I'm looking at your Twitter page right now, and it looks you got a healthy following, man.
Yeah. It wasn't that way at all time. Again, like with Twitter and any type of social media, you're gonna get those robots who just want to follow you, and they bring no value to your cause whatsoever. So I actually had to download a program to kind of sort through which ones were actual people and which ones were actual robots.
Are you serious?
Yeah, kid you not. Like, there's a lot of people that follow me that are like, get Twitter followers for like $39.99 and shit like that. I was like, I don't follow those guys.
Yeah, you know, I found some of those on Instagram too.
Yeah, they tag me on Instagram, so they're starting to do that shit on Instagram, and it pissed me off. So I report every fucking thing that I get tagged in that's not a picture of me and my friend.
Yeah,
I don't do this, because what that's gonna do is that's gonna hinder, like, that's gonna literally block out your main audience and literally just focus on them. Those are robots. They're not gonna bring you any value to the marketplace whatsoever. So why would you have them following you, or why would you follow them? So I literally have to clean out, like, I cleaned out my entire Twitter. Like, I had about a good maybe 6,000 people following me, and a good 3,000 of those people were just robots.
Jesus.
Just there. So I had to literally, because I usually, whenever I tweet something, I get, like, tons of retweets. And, like, I figured out why, because most of those robots were retweeting what I was doing, but I didn't see any results. Like, these robots would retweet, and then another robot would retweet, and there would just be this horrible cycle of like 64 retweets of no one was seeing it. So I was like, okay, so if I'm retweeting about 70, 80 times of content, and it's getting passed on to this network, yet no one is buying my book, what the hell is going on? And then that's when I discovered that most of the shit was some fucking robot taking my my tweets and
look
my promos.
Look how angry you get.
Yeah, dude, dude. There's people out there that does this shit for no reason. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to run a business or start a company or stuff like that, or sell something, you can't, because you have these robots literally blocking your audience from actually seeing what you're doing. So mm-hmm. now, even though I've gone from like 60-something retweets to like maybe 5 or 6, those 5 or 6 retweets are from actual genuine people that like the content that I'm posting. I'd rather get 6 retweets from people who like what I'm posting than 70 retweets from people who have no idea what they're retweeting, you know?
Yeah.
Same with Instagram. Like, Instagram is starting to get into that cycle too, where people are just liking your photos for no apparent reason, and they don't know who you are. I don't follow those people. I'll take the likes, don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to follow you, because what's going to happen is that wall that is going to be between me and my audience is going to start to get built, and my audience is not going to be able to see anything I do, which really makes it hard for me to sell my books and build a following, if you have, like, fucking Terminators and Skynet trying to hinder what you're trying to do. And it pisses me off that people actually do that. Same with Facebook. I don't accept anybody on Facebook unless we have some type of connection. Like, if you're an author, I'm going to connect to you. If you do Vima, I'm going to connect to you. You are a comic book nerd or something like that, or you're a third-party mutual friend to somebody else, I'm going to accept you. But if I don't recognize your name or anything like that, I'm very cautious on when I accept you, or I will go to your profile and see what you're doing. If there's nothing on your profile, I don't accept it, because usually most of the time that is someone trying to hack your account. And I've had my account, I have both my Twitter and my Facebook account hacked, and it really screwed me up.
Really?
So, yeah, they're out there. Like, I had somebody hacked into my Twitter and started posting all this porn on my page, and I'm like,
That was me, actually. Sorry about that. I know, those black dicks that you saw on your feed. Yeah, that's sorry, man.
Yeah, I was like, it pissed me off because I couldn't tweet for the entire day to tell people that, no, it's not me. Because you get a certain amount of tweets that you're able to tweet a day. If you
Did they change your password or something, or what?
Yeah, I had to change my password, and then I had to go in and literally debug my entire Twitter. I had to get it on my computer and fucking find out who was doing it and remove them completely. And then I had to call Twitter and tell them that someone hacked my account. And they were going to delete my account because they thought that it was me posting up all that stuff. And a lot of people that were following me were reporting that I was posting up all this porn and shit. So it wasn't me. They were going to delete my Twitter account because they thought it was. But I had to go and, like, literally apologize to all of my followers that it wasn't me. Someone hacked my account. I apologize. Please don't let this ruin anything that you or, you know. Please don't let this be, because I don't post porn. I watch it, but I don't post it. Okay.
Well, we all watch porn. All right. Nobody's talking shit about porn. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, just shitty that you got hacked.
And it was porn. It was like I can understand, like, okay, porn is one thing. Like, people are going to either like it or not. It was like pedophile, like shit.
What? I was gonna say there's a lot of porn on Twitter that doesn't get.
But it was like little like pedophile shit that somebody was posting on my Twitter, and they thought it was me.
Ooh,
and I was like, it's not me.
Man.
That's why I'm just like really skeptical of people. Like, if you follow me, I'm going to check out your profile. If you're like an author, entrepreneur, stuff like that, I'm going to follow you. But if I see like nothing there, you have like 40,000 followers and one person that actually follows me, I'm not going to follow you, dude. Let's be honest. I'm not going to do it.
That's creepy, man. They're trying to tarnish your name, man. That's hardcore.
And I don't respond to, like, direct messages. Like, I knew it was you when you were direct messaging me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was you because you had the picture, but I usually don't open up direct messages or anything like that on Twitter, because that's one of the number one ways that they get you. It's like that, so.
Really?
That's why I don't open up direct messages or anything like that. Like, I'll go to your profile and tweet you on your page to contact you, but I would never send a direct message, nor would I open up and read a direct message from somebody I don't know.
Wow, you're really safe now. Fuck.
Yeah, fuck that. I'm not doing that again. I was like, it's not me. My mom was calling me and shit. What's all this kitty porn on your Twitter? I'm like, what the fuck? Like, not me, mom. Are you kidding me? Do you think this is me, your son? Come on.
I don't know, man.
Just came out of the
Did you hear about that? There was a deputy, I forgot where, that just got arrested for apparently sexting this 14-year-old boy. Dude. He's like 24. He's 10 years older.
That's fucking gross.
Yeah. I mean, I can get it when you're older, you know, maybe the age gap there might be a little bit different, but maturity level between a 14-year-old and a 24-year-old,
vastly different.
Yeah, it's completely different, man. What the fuck are you doing?
Like, I did that yesterday. You know, they have that website where you can type in your address and fucking you see all the sex offenders pop up. Man, my screen was red dotted up. I'm like, fuck! I was like, shit! Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. And I was like, every time I go downstairs to my car, I look around and I'm like, it could be you. It could be you. I don't know who it is.
Someone
here.
Where do you live, man? Is Vegas just like pedophile central,
Vegas
or
is, what? Vegas is. If not a place, I would never raise kids here in Vegas.
No.
Fuck that.
It used to be the meth capital, wasn't it?
It still is.
No, it's not. Columbus, Ohio is in meth capital now.
No. Would you? I drive by and I've noticed
per
that
capita.
When you have like foil covering your windows. I thought that's a meth lab. And I see that shit so much here in Vegas. I'm just like, first of all, how do you even get the foil to stick? Like, tape? Or well, something
tape,
like what
man,
you,
yeah, it's not rocket science.
if people wanted to block out the sun from their house, all they got to do is get some blackout curtains. That's what I got, and my house is perfectly fine. Okay, you don't need to fucking.
Meanwhile, some other guy writing like comic book stories down the street is like, I know this house with blackout windows that are making meth. It's a meth lab out there.
That's how it is. But anyways, like I've never seen like a female pedophile before. I've never seen that before. There are those. But they're so good at hiding it because no one would assume that.
See when a guy does it, because you know a guy can actually ruin a boy. You know, yeah. I mean a boy or a girl. You know, if like for instance that 24-year-old. Like, you know, sexually assaults a 12-year-old girl. That girl's not going to have kids. But no. If, like, a 24-year-old woman, you know, sexually assaults, you know, a 13-year-old boy, it's sort of like, nice. Well done. it's like you didn't rape that boy. You just let him fuck you, right? I mean, there was I forgot what stand-up comedian said that.
I've never watched an episode of Law and Order where the pedophile was a woman. I've never seen it.
No, there's been several court cases like that. Yeah, I know of one story. I think it was out here in Cali where, you know, the boy even got the girl pregnant. Like it was one of the, it got the teacher pregnant.
Yeah.
But they loved each other and whatever, quote unquote, love each other.
And then, like, you see, like, when you actually hear that woman talk, you're like, oh, this bitch is fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah. She's into this kid.
Law and Order where the pedophile is a girl. Because they always fuck with the guy. You sick fuck. You're talking to these boys. Stuff like that. I want to see that exact same scenario just with a woman. A really hot woman. Not like a fat, old, like, disgusting one. Like, a really hot female, like, I don't know, Gina Jameson or something like that. Let's see how she does being a pedophile in Law and Order. I think we'll see how that goes.
I'm pretty sure there was one teacher at our school that was down.
That's the story? You're talking about the story?
Damn, I was not going to say her name, but you just straight up said her name. Damn.
Well, I mean,
we all knew.
We all knew.
You know. I just matured late. She wasn't ready for me. So that's all. She wasn't down. She wasn't down for the cause. Dude, that's the only math class that I got straight A's.
Yeah, because y'all paying attention.
All right,
we
man.
All paid attention to what she was doing. It wasn't hard.
I'm going to have to cut it. But actually, I want to let you know that I'm going to be in Vegas next week.
Man, well, hit me up. You got my number, dude. Let's get together, get some drinks or something.
Yeah, I'm gonna be there from the 9th to. Well, hold on. I'll fucking text it to you. All right, I'll tell you where I'll be and for how long. All right.
Yeah.
But thanks, man. Thanks for coming on. And hold on, just hold on for a bit. Let me do some commercials and some bullshit, and then close out, and then I'll say some real goodbye to you. All right, man.
All right, dude.
All right, hold on. So anyway, thanks, Will, for coming on. And you can check out the Zenton Chronicles at thezentonchronicles.com. T-H-E. And Zenton is X-E-N-T-O-N, chronicles.com. And you can also follow him on Twitter at thezenton. T-H-E-X-E-N-T-O-N. And what's your Instagram?
The same thing.
The Zenton?
Yep.
All right, The Zenton. Check him out. Read all fucking 4 books. I'm kind of interested what the graphic novel is going to look like, man. That looks, what you just showed me right now looks pretty pretty fun, interesting.
You and me both. If you go on my Instagram, I got some already finished panels, like with the words and color and everything. So you can find that on Instagram. Check them out. Let me know what they look like, because I know I got a lot of work to do when it comes to coloring, but I have room for improvement, I know that for sure.
All right. So you heard him. Send him direct messages of dick pics and some viruses on Instagram, and make sure to tag him on things where he's not on, and neither are his friends. And again, I want to thank the Coco Jack. Bust some nuts and drink some Coco Jack. and on it. O-N-N-I-T, make yourself better, and check all of that shit out at the website abspodcast.com/support just to check out everything. And you can also listen to previous podcasts there. And follow us on Twitter at abspodcast. There it goes. So simple. All right. All right, guys. Have a good night. Bye.